Fred, hello.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
What's going on? Are you on fire?
Ron is dead.
How you doing, Stanky Leg?
High five from everyone.
Took it to the limit.
I have a horrible foot fetish.
Do you?
Let's go, Red Sox. Let's go, Red Sox.
Hear me like a bow, bow, bow.
Go, Red Sox.
Hear me like a bow, bow, bow. Wall dick, where you at?
Well, that's why they call me country.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
If for some reason you've been listening to a show that ignores Bruins fans and says no one wants to hear about hockey, too bad, because here's what you've been missing.
Marchand turns the net, has a shot, and scores! 10 times in his career, Marchand has plunged the dagger into an opponent's heart in overtime.
Let's go, Bruins!
Here's David Krejci, goes around Jordan Staal, he's got Heinen in middle.
For Pastrnak. Ryan Tinalo's first goal as a Bruin.
Never thought we'd make it all the way.
Saved by Ryan. Another save by Tuukka Rask. Tuukka Rask putting on a clinic here. Defense scores! Tuukka Rask saves the day in overtime to win it for Boston.
Like to win with what Boston fans appreciate. Hard work, blue collar, and a certain level of pace and skill.
And the horn will sound. The tempers are still flaring. But when you look at the standings tomorrow, the team at the top of the Eastern Conference, the top of the Atlantic Division, will read Boston Bruins.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning. We are the Toucher and Rich radio program. Tom Ferratara Studios. I got a gift, I believe, from Marshall Hook.
Your wild card was just here. He dropped it off maybe 10 minutes ago. I don't know what it is.
It just said, I do not like you.
Oh.
And then I didn't get a chance to open the gift.
Okay.
But he came here special this early in the morning?
I think he's on his way into work.
He's got a driving assignment.
Yeah.
In other words, he's got the dash cam that he's got to scout the roads. I don't know why, but that's
there's no snow today, right?
There's a lot of mist. At least there wasn't the way in.
He's your misting man?
He's the mist man.
Okay.
Very thoughtful, very thoughtful. Well, last night was the best Bruins game that you've seen in
probably about 3 years. They take on Tampa. Tampa is the have most points in the Eastern Conference, and it was a combination of finesse and grit. You saw Tuukka Rask get into it. You saw David Backes take on the entire entire Tampa Bay bench. It was, and then you saw the ping pong play between Marchand, Pastrnak, and Krug. Bergeron. Oh, Krug?
Krug was the backhand pass across.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my bad. All right, so you saw the ping pong passing. That was a game that reminded me of the game against Dallas. I believe the year that they won the cup, where Ott got in a fight and got his ass kicked, and then Avery got in a fight and got his ass kicked.
Oh, that was like right after the opening faceoff they went at it.
That was the one, didn't they set a record for penalty minutes that game? Are you talking about that the Dallas game where there were just the multiple fights?
Yeah, this was like, right from the get-go. I mean, they dropped the gloves. I remember this. This was,
well, that was a
at
game
least 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah. Well, no, it was the year they won the cup. Or the year before they won the cup.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And right, it was like a coming out party. And this reminded me of that kind of win.
Yeah.
This was a team win. You had, like I said, you had Raskin into it. You had people coming out and supporting their teammates.
The other thing is, too, is I found these Tampa Bay, the two beforehand, these games, fairly boring. I mean, they were, like, I know the first one was a tight game, and then, of course, you had the shutout just recently. But last night was the first time where I was like, okay, if these guys meet up in the Eastern Conference Finals, this might be an okay. Seems to be at least a little bit of bad blood there and some animosity, which I liked. So now, even for just entertainment purposes, you've got to look forward to that. But on top of that, they've dominated Tampa Bay all season. There hasn't been one moment in any of the games that Tampa Bay has had a lead. So you have to feel good. And that's the best. And that's the best, the cream of the crop right there. That's the as good as it gets. And then you got old Ness and Plus just kicking ass at the beginning of the game.
I couldn't have figured out what was going on. I thought it was just me and it was a DirecTV thing.
Oh, no.
Oh,
that
Lord.
That was just, I mean, it's like they just brought in a bunch of, I don't know what's going on, but there's just people throwing things in the control room.
It was like people leaning on the control board and hitting buttons randomly.
So, like, you know, you switch over to Ness and Plus because, you know, the Red Sox thing is still going on and you flip it over there, and so they show Rene Rancourt walk out into the ice, but there's no sound. And then they have, like, the camera on the bench, and they're standing there, and all of a sudden, randomly, intermittently, in and out, you would hear Rene Rancourt's voice and then all of a sudden it would go to the second half of a commercial. It would start right in the middle of a commercial, and then it would go right back to Rene Rancourt.
Some guy driving a truck with music is weird.
And then it would just go silent, and then another half of a commercial, and then awkwardly there'd be this split screen where on the left would be once again the Bruins watching Rene Rancourt silently with no sound, and then the left side of it would be Tom Karen shuffling his papers.
See, when I turned it on Ness and it was Rancourt doing the national anthem,
mm-hmm.
and it was uncut.
Okay, because what had happened at that point was, you know, they told you at the end of the Red Sox game to flip it over to Ness and Plus. So I went over there, and after, it was only about 5 minutes
that
happened.
It was almost seamless at the end of the game. I mean, the Bruins game, legit, the coverage
right
legit started maybe 30 seconds later.
So you got about 5 minutes of Ness and Plus wonderment until they told you you could switch it back to Ness and watch the game. They wisely switched the two,
right,
and they put the Red Sox postgame on Ness and Plus. But, I mean, you can just count on a Ness and Plus broadcast to seem like the worst media productions class thing in high school ever. I'm even giving that too much credit. It is just nobody knows what they're doing. It's like they bring in a guy because they don't have enough help over at Ness and to handle the Ness and Plus side of things, and it's just someone just jamming buttons and nobody having any idea how to do the broadcast whatsoever. But after that, of course, everything was phenomenal.
And then you had Jack Edwards say, does anyone have more fun than us? And
yes.
I would say, yes, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people have more fun than us.
Forgot your theory. Yeah, you're on the road a lot with nothing to do.
Yeah. I mean,
right? That's your theory about all of this?
I mean, I can watch the game just as much as you can. I don't have to work it. See, that's more fun than sitting there working it at the ninth floor. But this is a special team. This is obviously a special team. This is a team that you can have a feeling about going, making a deep playoff run again. It's, and then they were playing without Chara. They were playing without Nash.
DeBrusk.
Yeah. You could get, you get a feeling that, you know, when they're completely healthy, they're even grittier. And this is a team that can do it all. So it is, the sky's the limit with this team. And I like them over Tampa Bay, obviously, even though I would much rather prefer that they rest players rather than rush people back.
You still have that option. I mean, that option isn't going away.
No, I know.
And I don't think they're even stressing about being in first place. I think they're glad to be so. I mean, you could tell by the intensity last night, it's something that they wanted. But, Fred, I don't think in those final games, if there's players that they believe that they could get some rest and it would risk them getting first and home ice throughout the playoffs, then I don't think that – I think Cassidy's a little wiser than that. I believe that he would rather have the guys rest than try to get that, especially against someone like Tampa Bay.
They play Tampa Bay on Tuesday, so we shall see.
Yep.
I like that Chara sat out last night. I do like that. I like that, you know, there's no excuse now for minutes with him. You can't make the excuse that he's going into the playoffs not being rested. I don't want them freaking out and, you know, going all out and getting someone hurt. But you saw Pastrnak, when Bergeron got hurt, just say, no. You got to start standing up for your teammates. And they did last night.
The goaltender. I mean, how often do you see a goaltender ready to go like that? I've never. Of course, the two guys that want to go are the two least likely guys on the roster to do that. You have Rask standing up against Konecker, who I believe was sitting mm-hmm. on someone in the crease. And then you had Vasilevskiy skate all the way down the ice, and the ref stopped him, which pissed me off.
Yeah, I know.
How often do you see a goalie fight? That would have been fantastic.
Be a Vernon situation.
It would have been great. Yeah. And then you have Pastrnak, of all people, drop the gloves as well. It was a great night all around. If you didn't like watching that game last night, I don't know what to tell you. Well, that's as good as it gets.
We will get into all of that, plus, of course, everything that happened with the old Red Sox. I mean, that was interesting. That was quite the swing of emotions from one game to the next last night, but there was some great post-game stuff from the Bruins and all sorts of other stuff to discuss, and we will do that in just a moment.
I can't wait to get to that Red Sox stuff.
Well, the Red Sox stuff's interesting. You know, you can't tell me that how that game ended wasn't interesting.
Yeah,
like, I mean, if it was just like a simple win or a simple loss, it's one thing, but I mean, come on. You can't tell me that wasn't kind of funny, the way it all went down.
I mean, they blew a lead.
Well, it's you know, Cora had been running his mouth during the, you know, about Kimbrel and how they weren't going to let these things happen. I guess Kimbrel was ready to go, and he was asked, why didn't you use him? It's like, yeah, maybe 10 days from now we would have put him in that situation, but opening day is a different story.
I actually understood that theory. I actually understood why Cora did that last night.
But I don't understand why he pulled Sale. Maybe you can tell me why he pulled Sale.
I have a theory about that too, sir.
Right. Because I didn't see the moment that they pulled Sale. Because I wanted to do other things before the Bruins game.
I understand. That's a long day of TV watching. Yeah, I understand.
I wanted to, you know, save it up for the game that mattered last night.
The hell you say.
Yeah. No, right. Only 161 games.
What's wrong
games
with
left.
You? It's opening day, Fred.
Only 161 games.
I watched
left.
All of it.
You did?
I watched most of it.
I have theories on why Sale didn't go pitch longer, and I have a theory on why Kimbrel did not come in.
They pulled Sale 97 pitches,
yes,
right?
Yes, correct.
Okay, I'm interested to hear your theory.
Okay.
Because I wasn't watching when they pulled him.
Yep.
I saw Joe Kelly came in and got rocked, but I did not see why they pulled Sale. Considering
92 pitches, by the way.
Well, it's even worse.
Yep.
Toucher.
Is this what you want?
And Rich.
Are you happy now?
Toucher and Rich.
Ah, sick.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Recapping what you missed. It's Toucher and Rich.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Marshall Hook coming through with a nice bottle of Johnny Walker.
Oh, sweet.
Remember when Rich was gone, we were going over... what were we going over? someone who was an everyman, and then we were going
over. Oh, that's
over,
right. Yeah.
Oh, that I didn't know anybody. Hardy put together a pretty good bit about who were the people that I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I it was, at least at the time until today, convinced that Hook hated me.
Mm-hmm.
He was very yelled about me on the air and things of this nature.
That's true. He did go off on you during the weekend. I remember that.
I had no reason not to think so, but I appreciated Marshall Hook.
Nice job.
There you go. Yeah. See? You complain, you get a nice gift.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Rich. A big game last night.
Yep, a game that had everything. Had the Bruins leaving the TD Garden in first place.
With 64 seconds left, Pastrnak feeds it ahead. Now Pastrnak on the line, right side. Centers, Bergeron out in front. Marchand shoots, he scores! That's a Gordie Howe for David Pastrnak. And more importantly, Brad Marchand stuffs in a backhander, making 4-2 Bruins with 55 seconds left. How's the view from the top spot?
Well, what was one of the most entertaining games of the year? The Bruins, for the third and every time this season, they beat the best team in the conference, Tampa Bay Lightning, but this time they did it with some venom. 4-2, the final score, and after that 10 minutes of glorious television on Nesson Plus, finally, they switched it over, and once the game started, so did the chippiness.
Right at the net, Paquette shoots, stick save made by Rask, and then he got a couple of bodies crashing in, and Rask just took a swing at Konecker, and he's going at it. Look out! It's a free-for-all left in the net as Rask was firing blockers and gloves.
Here comes Vasilevsky down. Referee just intercepted him. He was on his way to Tuukka Rask.
And then he got a pile of bodies at the bottom of the left-wing circle, but Rask was irate.
Jeez, listen to that place.
It was going to be... Vernon.
How can you stop the other goaltender? That was awful.
Was it Osgood or Vernon against Waugh? When they used to, with those.
I want to say Vernon, but I'm not sure.
Those glorious, glorious Red Wing Avalanche games back in the day.
What was that awful Tim Thomas fight that we saw where it was like everyone was fighting and then Tim Thomas and I forget who the other guy was met mid ice and it was just basically a pushing match? Like, all right, well, this is essentially a formality.
If it was Osgood and Waugh, go look at the highlights of the Red Wings Avalanche games. From the late 90s, where there were just bloodbaths. There were like 3.5 hour games because of all the fighting. And that was when you could rip jerseys off and stuff. And sure. Why? And Osgood or Vernon, I can't remember, dropped gloves and just were going in the middle of the ice.
Well, a Tuukka Rask fight is definitely a rare thing to see, but possibly not as rare as seeing this guy get in a fight.
The puck skittered wide behind the play. It's Pastrnak going to throw him with Girardi.
Well, it was Girardi that took down Bergeron. At least that's what Pastrnak saw.
And both guys threw a couple of haymakers. Neither connected. And they both go down at the near point, the Tampa end.
I mean, it was barely a fight, but the fact that this guy was a string bean was so into sticking up for his own guy,
well,
that says something
Bergeron
about the team. No, you can't.
Yeah, right now you can't. If you touch Bergeron, there's going to be retribution.
And you're still missing some size, well, so it leaves it to somebody else to step forward.
You just didn't think it would be
Chara
him to
Nash.
Do it. Yeah.
Obviously you don't think he's going to fight, but I mean, it's behind the play. Yesterday was a huge, like I said, it was that, like that game against Dallas where they fought Ott and they fought Avery. This was a game that not only did they win, but they showed the ability to stand up for each other and they showed the ability to be a sandpaper team and a finesse team. But this is the kind of game that unifies teams.
Well, it was funny because David Pastrnak afterwards admitted that he had never fought. Never. In all of his years of hockey, he had never done it before. So he got himself a Gordie Howe hat trick. And as far as his line, man, they continue to make ridiculous goals such as this one.
Backhands for Bergeron. 20 seconds left of 4-on-4. Now Marchand in the slot. Krug, center. They score! Krug went diagonally across the slot to Bergeron. And he whistled one home. Vasilevsky had no chance. Make it 3-1.
Oh, just a beautiful, beautiful goal. How do you like your matchup against the Lightning now? As I was mentioning, in all three matchups this year, the Lightning have not led once, and now the Bruins are number one in the conference. However, the two teams do meet again in just 4 days. Here is Brad Marchand on the intensity of the game last night.
It's definitely a playoff feel, too, and obviously we all know how big it was for the standings and what it meant to both teams. So it's great to see the guys react the way they did and have the game we did. But you know, it's just another game we got to keep going and worry about the next one now.
Think about this, and you mentioned how they're a sandpaper team, they're a finesse team, they stand up for one another. In big games like this, you want your big players to play well. Tuukka Rask was outstanding last night, and you got goals from
off goal. But yes, yeah,
you
was outstanding.
The one that got underneath his left arm. I mean, that shouldn't happen. But right. The save on Kucherov, and then 10 seconds later, you have the goal from Bergeron, and you got goals from Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak in a big game. You got 26 saves and a great effort from Tuukka Rask. And defensively, 5-on-5, did you really see Kucherov or Stamkos at all last night?
Kucherov, though.
That one shot that Rask made the save on.
Heinen talking to Kucherov?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a little bit of a pussy.
Yeah. At the end of the game, you pissed off. You got in the head of the other. Kucherov may win the Hart Trophy this year, and you got in his head last night. And as I said before, 5-on-5, you didn't see a lot of Kucherov. You didn't see a lot of Stamkos. Those are two of the best five players in the league this year.
You didn't see Stamkos much at all. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
First off, I think that fight you're talking about was Tim Thomas versus Carey Price.
It was. And the Bruins ended up winning that one, I think, like 8-6 or something like that. You're right.
But people always, I've never been a big Tuukka Rask fan, but people always unfairly compare him to Tim Thomas in 2011. And the one way that he's really starting to win over some fans is with fights like that, he's starting to show some attitude. He's finally starting to show what Tim Thomas showed back in the day. He actually seems like he cares. And I think that's what people really want from him.
Yeah, and when it was at the end of the game, when it was 5-on-6, you saw Rask come into the scrum. To kind of even things up.
That was nice. I mean, I think he won some people over yesterday. Speaking of Tuukka, he was asked about getting physical last night.
The first period, somebody fell on my knee there. I think there was no penalty call. There was actually a penalty call on that. And then that one, you know, it just felt, you know, to me that I don't think our own Ds were jumping on me. And, you know, I felt like they were pushed or something. So I just had to let them know that I'm there, and, you know, because it happened twice. So I just, you know. Jumped in there and threw a couple punches, and that's it.
And then there's fighting David Pastrnak last night, who, once again, might have been the last guy on the team you'd expect to fight, and here he is.
How is he missing so many parts of teeth if he's never fought? It's quite amazing.
I mean, pucks and elbows and sticks to the mouth, and I mean, just anything but knuckles, I guess.
I guess.
As soon as Tuukka actually fires me up, as soon as I saw him running around in the first or second period, so I was like, oh, I guess it's my time now.
Because he's inspired by Tuukka. You saw Tuukka do it, he goes, all right, well, I guess I'm the only guy who hasn't done it.
I saw a guy 6'3", 70 pounds.
Yeah, I was just going to say, was there a small part of you watching Pastrnak do this and, all right, this is just what we need for him to hurt his hand? That's the first thing I thought of.
No. With Tuukka Rask, all I thought was you could just blow on the guy and fall over.
That's true, too.
I mean, he's like a string bean.
No, with Pastrnak, you knew it wasn't going to be like...
No, it wasn't going to be a knockdown dragout, but these weird things happen sometimes.
I don't know.
Girardi, he doesn't fight a lot either, but it's just weird.
You hold the guy's jersey, and then you throw like a haymaker and miss, and then you go down to the ice. I just liked that he stood up for Bergeron.
Yeah, that was nice. That was great. That says something.
Right. And then when you got guys on the ice who can actually regulate, it's going to be an interesting team.
Well, we got a nice matinee tomorrow. Florida Panthers visit the TD Garden. Puck drops at 1 p.m. And, of course, as always, you can hear it right here on 98.5 Sports Hub.
All right. We will be back. We can take some phone calls on the Bruins. Also, a opening day for the Red Sox where they played well and then... John has some theories about...
I do.
Why I'm just fascinated why they took out Sale. I don't know. But I looked at the box score and I said...
92 pitches through 6 pitches. Innings, 1 hit, 9 strikeouts, 6 shutout innings.
I thought, well, you don't want to overuse him in the first game.
I know.
You got to limit his pitch count to 92.
Yep.
As a professional baseball player.
Correct.
Who was not injured, I believe, at any time last season.
Nope.
So you want to... you know, throw a game away if that's what you want to do. You got to test those middle relievers.
Mm-hmm. Matt Barnes, great last night. Great. Seventh inning, piece of cake. Yep.
Lights out. So we'll have all that for you. Here are the headlines.
Stay tuned for more Toucher and Rich. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
985 The Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. And Rich, yesterday was opening day. What an opening day. Perhaps we will hear from Roach from his poem yesterday. And Dick Flavin. Can you give us a little Dick Flavin for the people?
I will see if I can do that.
Because the poet laureate of the Red Sox was, of course, always up for getting in the spirit with a beautiful poem about the national pastime.
Mm-hmm. Opening day, 2013. Baseball springs eternal. It's opening day. The feds might show up and take me away. The birds begin singing. The trees start to bloom. The setbacks will surface. The losses, the gloom. Things couldn't get much worse.
So he kind of saw the future, it seems. Boy. Like, when he wrote that.
Cashing it in, ladies and gentlemen.
Right,
pushing
right.
all my chips in.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's sitting in the basement, right. Rocking back and forth, regretting his mistakes, Dick Flavin.
It's Dark Flavin.
Do you have another one?
Maybe about his guy John Henry. You like some?
Ode to John Henry, 2005. We all have dark secrets that nobody knows. This is my confession. Are you ready? Here it goes. I've killed John Henry, the son of a bitch.
I don't know. I don't know if you would do that.
John Henry, the man that could beat the machine?
He could, yes. He could beat the machine.
Yeah. John Henry was a man. John Henry, long and lean.
Right. So
John Henry was the man who could... Dick Flavin, very old.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because we know the John Henry that owns the team.
Yeah, not of that
alive
one.
Alive or well.
Yeah, well, maybe he was seeing the future. He knew what was going to happen yesterday because things started off okay for the Red Sox.
Toward the alley on the run span, and Kiermaier, it gets between them. It's going to keep on rolling. Another run is in. Nunez rounding second. On his way to third. They're going to wave him in. Fabulous trying to bring him home. Here's the throw. It strikes the mound, and he scores. On a little blooper in the left center field, he touches them all. And the Red Sox lead it 3-0.
Okay, that is Nesson, and that is, of course, amazing. Listen, an in-the-park home run by Eduardo Nunez and Chris Sale pitching a one-hit shutout six innings was about as good as it gets. But then came the Joe Kelly Show.
Third, 3-2. Swinging a fly ball down the line. Mookie won't get to it. Onto the running track. That's going to clean him off. Kiermaier in. Gomez in. Miller in. Spin all the way down to third. It gets by. He will hold at third base. All the way down the right field line. And Tampa Bay has taken the lead.
Red Sox really screwed Kelly up. Kelly was good with the Cardinals.
He wasn't bad last year.
He wasn't bad.
As a reliever, he wasn't bad last year.
But he was, they moved him.
Yeah, he was 12-6 the year as a starter before he got here.
Yeah, and they moved a big piece that was making no money in Lackey.
This Joe Kelly bears no resemblance to the Joe Kelly they traded for. No, that's true.
They have a way of screwing up pitching. Yep. They have a way of just...
From the minor leagues on up. Yep.
Yep. They get big talent. They get big prospects, and they screw them all up, and then they're out of baseball.
Well, with a four-run lead, the only thing you cannot do as a relief pitcher is walk batters, and they walked four of the first six batters in that inning. Joe Kelly and Carson Smith crapped the bed on opening day. 6-4 the final score. Here is Joe Kelly on what happened on the mound.
You know, there's always, you know, could have tried this, could have done that. But at the end of the day, you know, it's something out there that, you know, that's pretty pathetic what I did. I mean, that's just... Can't do that.
For some reason in a game like that, the toughest interview to hear is the Chris Sale one. Is the guy who went in and just absolutely killed it. Here's Chris Sale being asked about everything afterwards.
I mean, we show up to win, obviously, but you know, things like that happen. I mean, that's why we play the game, right? I mean, don't ever take it for granted. It's never over. Just take it off the chin and come back tomorrow ready to go.
All right, before we get to your theory, John Walk, on why what happened, I do want to hear this. But Alex Cora, who all winter long had been saying that Craig Kimbrell would be used in these high-leverage situations before the ninth inning. He was asked why Kimbrell wasn't even considered last night in the exact situation that he had been preaching about over the last few months.
We talked about it before the game. I'm not going to put him in that spot right now because we feel he's ready, but I don't think it's fair for him to come in a situation, you know, it's not a clean inning. It is something that we map it out, we talk about it, and we stick to it.
Yeah, it's not fair to put him in a high-pressure situation.
What?
Being a high-priced...
Most closers prefer to come in without runners on base.
I understand.
It's nuts, but that's what it is. And Kimbrel pitched, what, 2-3 times this spring? Because he spent a lot of the spring up here with his daughter.
They said he was ready.
Well, I understand that, but honestly, I don't...
Okay.
I think that's Cora, like, falling on his sword
that's
there.
That's fine. I didn't mind the Kimbrel thing. What I'm fascinated about is your... take on pulling Sale, 92 pitches, completely dominant.
Yep.
Why pull him?
I think ultimately, watching what happened to Sale at the end of last year, we all agree the last 4 weeks were not good. They were mediocre to poor because he ran out of gas.
Right.
He was striking out all those hitters, threw a lot of pitches, and then didn't have anything left for the last 3 weeks of the regular season and the playoffs. I think there was a concerted effort to hold him back this spring. And you saw him pitch an inning or two in a lot of minor league games. Only made, I think, 4 starts in 4 weeks.
Fair
enough.
I think
14 innings, whatever. I think there's an effort to save him early so he has more bullets in the gun late. That's why they pulled him and didn't have him throw 120 pitches. So,
hold on, 92 pitches,
threw 6. Say you run him out there for one more. It takes him 10 or 15 pitches. Now you're at 107, 108. You don't bring him out for the 8th inning anyway.
No, but you
put him in for at least one more inning.
All right, fine. They still got, in the end, Barnes still shut him out in the 7th inning. The problem was with the 8th, not the 7th.
But then I can go 8-9. Then I can use Kimbrel in that situation.
Either way, Kelly and Smith pitched the 8th, not Barnes. I think you still have the same problem in the 8th inning.
Yeah, I had a problem with the Kimbrel situation.
Yeah, no, Kelly and Barnes would have pitched the 8th. Not Kelly and Smith would have pitched the 8th. Barnes is your 7th inning guy. So,
no,
say,
I know. But
Sale pitches the 7th. It's a shutout inning. It happened anyway. The problem is with the bullpen in the 8th.
Yeah, but that's why you got Smith.
Mm-hmm.
But that looks like it's going to be a failure based on last year and this year. I understand that there was injury concerns. I just don't take a guy out who's rolling that's thrown 92 pitches through 6.
I think that's the reason. That's the reason Cora pulled him. You can argue whether or not he should have come out for the 7th. Fine.
Well, he obviously pulled him because he didn't want to overuse him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if that's going to be the strategy with him all year, you might not have the luxury of trotting him out of the playoffs.
I don't think it's all year. I just think it's early. I think you save him the first month or two, and then you cut him loose. So you'll get full-fledged Sale and 120-pitch Sale, whatever, third week of May, Memorial Day.
I'm not
they'll
asking
take the shackles
for 120
off.
Pitches. I'm asking the way he was pitching, he's getting out of there at 105. I mean, he's getting out of there at 105.
By the way, Craig Bedard apparently asked Craig Kimbrel if he could ask him a few questions, and Kimbrel went, nope. And walked away.
I'm sure Kimbrel wanted to pitch.
Sure.
Cora apparently told him before the game he wasn't going to be. He wasn't. The 9th was his, and that's it. So I don't think this move came as a shock to him. But watching Kelly and Smith throw up all over themselves, he's like, "Please put me in."
Yeah,
I'm sure he was pissed.
He said,
but it didn't
coach.
Come as a surprise to him.
Mm-hmm. I'm ready to play.
So right after the commercial, John Sterling, of course, the guy who does the play-by-play for the Jesus.
I heard this yesterday.
We know that he's kind of slowly been losing it and losing his mind.
Yesterday was an all-timer.
Yesterday, his brain exploded.
My God.
He had 2 home run calls that people are trying to transcribe and trying to figure out what he was trying to do.
Fred, have you heard this?
Yes, I have.
It's baffling.
No, I know. He's can't figure out stance yet.
Jesus.
In fairness, he's only had 1 game to really get in the groove. All right, we'll find out what he had to say in just a moment. Tutcher and Rich, Giancarlo Stanton, debut for the Yankees yesterday, hits 2 slam-lam-a-rees.
First at bat.
Bang-a-bang-a-dong-dong-dong. Oh,
they're not salamis anymore?
Oh, yeah, they're the salamis, they're ding-dongs, they're roly-polies. They're
roly-polies.
They're souvenir-a-roonies. I got a million names for
them.
But they all end in a Rooney.
Some of them are Rooney.
Okay.
Some of them, hoorah!
Well, yesterday, John Sterling had a hard time. Maybe just wasn't ready for this new player. He had no time to really prepare for having one of the best players in
no time
in baseball.
only months and months.
The Yankees just got him.
He seems to be a busy man when he's not calling games, going to his apartment and staring in the corner of his chair, doing nothing but waiting for the next time that he calls a baseball game.
Again, if you want to read something truly depressing, there was an article years ago about John Sterling's life off the road, and it consists of him going to a small apartment and watching soap operas that he had taped over the course of however long he was out of town.
I'm sure on a VHS.
It wasn't a VHS, but I don't know how old the article is.
So Stanton hits two home runs. Let's hear both calls, shall we?
Swung on and drilled to deep right center field. It is high. It is far. It is gone. It is first Yankee at bat. Giancarlo. Non si può stopparlo. It is a Stantonian home run, a two-run blast to right center in his first Yankee at bat.
Okay, no si puedo parlo, which I don't think means anything.
Well, I don't know. No, yes,
non si to, like there's no real translation of what he said.
Maybe he was having some kind of medical situation.
Some are saying that it's close to non si puoi di parlo, which is, it says, I can't speak of it, but that's Italian, I believe, and he's not Italian, Giancarlo Stanton. But here's the second call, which is...
Giancarlo Stanton's not Italian?
No.
That's shocking.
He's not Italian.
Swung on and into the air to deep center. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. His second home run of the game. Giancarlo non si può Fed Marlo. It's a Stantonian home run to dead center.
He did it again.
A solo shot.
But
the Yankees take a 6-1 lead.
Changed the pronunciation and changed one of the words slightly. You know what's funny? I went into my group here to take a look and find old John Sterling clips, and I almost clipped.
The Giambi ones are my favorites.
Well, what happened was I saw one
steroid,
titled...
Steroid.
Giambino.
Giambino with the human growth hormone.
Lance, who's the Houston Astros guy they had? Lance...
Bergman?
St. Louis. That one.
No. He had some bad ones, but as I was going through it, I saw these clips titled Sterling Dash, and I'm like, what is this? And I was like, oh, there's a different Sterling that we have a bunch of clips of.
Well, yes, he's a business person. He's
got age.
That's right. Of course.
I did the whole Donald Sterling thing. It happened, and
that'd be funny if...
He's got age.
Judge Sterling and Stanton with a ding-dong-a-reno. AIDS!
He's got AIDS!
When he had those AIDS.
Oh my God. That Donald Sterling thing was unbelievable.
Tom Hanks, Philadelphia. Weird Mr. Belvedere.
And he had AIDS.
My wife turned to me the other day. She goes, whatever happened to V. Stiviano? Do you remember the woman that brought down Donald Sterling and she had that visor in front of her face, probably because she looked like Edward James Olmos?
She did. She was not good skin.
No, she was not very attractive, but nonetheless, she suckered that guy into giving up the farm, apparently.
Oh, it's a big old case of syphilis.
Is that what he says?
Stanton syphilis is one over the right field fence.
Deals. Swung on it. Hit in the air to deep right. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. In the second deck. Ichiro. The Yankees' rising sun says sayonara in the second deck and right. The Yankees now trail 5-4.
Well, it probably only needed one or two of those calls.
Yeah.
And Ichiro not going crazy.
That's probably a good point.
Sure, you're
Did
probably
you read
right.
the article on Ichiro?
It is really, really sad.
Yeah.
What that guy has to go through. I mean, you joke about your father dropping you off at, Tom Emanski, and you didn't want to go. What Ichiro had to go through as a kid, now granted, it provided the foundation for one of the best, a Hall of Fame baseball player.
Right.
But his relationship with his dad does not exist. He hates his father. And there was one situation, Rich, where finally his father would take him to hit, 50 soft toss, 100 batting practice pitches, during the afternoon, have him go through fielding drills, and then have him hit in the cage at night, 7 days a week throughout his entire childhood. And finally, Ichiro sat down on the mound, as any 10-year-old would do after being bullied by his father for his life and refused to do anything. So his father started firing baseballs at him. And Ichiro's reflexes were too good until his father threw one at his face, and Ichiro just put his hand up and caught it in front of his nose.
It's like the movie Whiplash.
Yes, in a lot of ways
it's like the guy just beats him to it, and finally there's that moment where he grabs it and comes back, but he's been made
such terrible things happen to that kid.
But and the sad thing is now Ichiro, that's his routine.
He's a lot like Agassi, who couldn't stay in tennis but played it. That's Ichiro's trapped. He knows nothing else but to hit.
No, and then he has no idea of what he's going to do after baseball. So
because he can't envision a life without what he's doing.
Exactly, because he spends every waking moment basically focused on. There was a story about whoever he was playing for was in town in New York, and they heard someone hitting off a tee, and they were hitting against the backstop of this just random field in Central Park.
Right.
Another guy from Ichiro's team is walking through the park, and he's like, what the hell? This guy is ripping balls off the backstop. This sounds like someone special, and it's Ichiro.
It's in the morning.
Jeez.
It's a day of a game.
It's a day of the game, and he's just in Central Park by himself.
Killing it.
Hitting balls.
Yeah, he's 44. He's working out in 31-degree weather in Japan.
Renting out a full-on stadium.
A full stadium, because he can't think of anything. He's 44 years old. Mm. Can't think of anything else in his life. And he said when he retires, he'll just disappear. I mean, a lot of people think, and they didn't say this, but I mean, he would die if he couldn't play baseball.
Well, he'll certainly be a lost soul. He has nothing. I mean,
it's really sad.
That's been his routine for what, 30 years?